Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. How you doing? And a Mother's Day shout out to you all, for you moms out there who we all love. And if you've listened to this show at all, you know how we feel about our moms. They do great work. They lay the foundation for all of us. And dads, we love you too, but it's Mom's Day, so we give a shout out to her. And as we do on Mother's Day, and any day that you're listening to the Danny Tisdale Show, you know that I'm Danny Tisdale. And if you have any questions or want to tweet us any responses, please do. And you can do that on any of our platforms at Harlem World Magazine. Today we do as we always do. We have leaders, legends, and trailblazers talk about and celebrate the greatest community in the world, and that is Harlem. We start today's conversation as part of a 3-day curated event in collaboration with Madam C.J. Walker and Annie Malone, friends, family, and associates, as we celebrate the incredible lives of these two women and celebrate Mother's Day also. And let us not forget that we are, as Governor Cuomo said today, coming to the end in a down cycle of the COVID crisis. Yes, we are still here. But we also are here with our guests. This conversation came about through Madam C.J. Walker, Annie Malone story based on the movie Self-Made that initially kicked off with Netflix and the story that they told. We thought we would try to tell some different stories about these two amazing business people who happen to be women and were moms. The stories that Netflix talked about, we will talk about it in some ways, but we look at it as a great opportunity to talk about how successful these two women were. And today we have Miss Alila Bundles with us today. And after a 30-year career as an executive and Emmy Award-winning producer with ABC News and NBC News, Ms. Bundles is now the brand historian for Madam C.J. Walker Beauty Culture, a line of hair care products created by Sundial Brands. She is a trustee of Columbia University and past chair person of the National Archives Foundation. On her own ground, her biography of Madam Walker is considered the most accurate account of Walker's life and times. The book won the Association of Black Women's Historians 2001 Letitia Woods Bronze Prize. She is working on her fifth book, rumor has it, The Joy Goddess of Harlem and the Harlem Renaissance biography of the great-great-grandmother. And how are you, Ms. Bundles?
I'm delighted to be here. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. And for our listeners, we, I think, had a podcast probably the first couple of years that we started Harlem World Magazine in 2003. And believe it or not, we just finished April that really kicked off our 16th year anniversary this year. So it's great to have you on the show more than anything. And congratulations on the, I guess that's in order. Congratulations for the series Self-Made on Netflix.
Well, you know, it is part of a 50-year journey with lots of different projects related to Madam Walker, and I think she's having a moment right now with the Netflix series and a new edition of On Her Own Ground and the remodeling of Villa LaWaro and remodeling and restoration of the Madam Walker Legacy Center in Indianapolis.
Fantastic.
And an exhibit at the Indiana Historical Society. So it is part of a matrix of wonderful ways to celebrate her life.
You know, and I'm going to do what I think should be done, and that is to give you your props, because I think without your continuance of telling that story, to telling her story, which is our story, we might not be here where we are to have this conversation. You have been a steady driver in getting the story out about Miss Walker. And I wanted to ask you, you know, what I think Netflix missed, at least on my little perspective here, is the amazing successful businesswoman that she was. And can you give any insight, Ms. Bundles, on really what made her the incredible businesswoman that she was so early. I was looking at some of the numbers, and, you know, we could probably go back and forth on when slavery ended, but, you know, we're talking
right.
about a few decades after slavery. We have these incredible two women doing incredible work. And I'm curious, what made Madam C.J. Walker as successful as she was?
You know, a combination of things, as it is with many people. When she moved, and when she was Sarah Breedlove, still in Louisiana during Reconstruction, and a widow at 20 with a young daughter, moved from Louisiana to St. Louis in 1888. Her brothers had preceded her. They had been part of an earlier migration of African Americans from the Delta. The Delta of the Mississippi, and her brothers were barbers, so they were in business. And as you know, black men dominated the barbering trade during that period of time. They also were members of St. Paul African Methodist Episcopal Church, and it was the women of the church in the Mite Missionary Society in the choir, where Sarah Breedlove, poor washerwoman that she was, still had a good enough voice to be in the choir. The leadership of the AME Church was international, so I think she began to observe organization during that period of time, political involvement, and then she modeled herself in many ways after those women who were in leadership roles in the club movement. So those are some of the early seeds that were planted.
And she was able to juggle both being a businesswoman and being a mom, which is what, of course, moms are doing today, as challenged as they are now and as even more challenged as they were in the past. Did she have the same challenges that moms have today as moms had at that time, you know, juggling both career and both motherhood?
Oh, absolutely. And when you think about it, she was a washerwoman, and there were times when they were almost homeless, even though she could rely to some degree on her brothers and the women of the church helped her. She still had to raise her child, and she just really had almost no means. Even had to put Lelia in the colored orphan's home during the week and when she worked away from home, because there was no daycare center. So that was difficult as she tried to juggle that, just struggling. And really a lot of her motivation for developing her business was to make her daughter's life better, which is what mothers and fathers still do today. So I would say she was devoted and generous and also indulgent. As they began to make more money, she wanted her daughter to follow in her footsteps. And sometimes they had friction over that, but they always – as one of her secretaries said, they loved each other dearly.
And, you know, I want to go back a little bit, too, and talk more about those business skills that she had. And really, in a lot of ways, trying to make a connection to how women today and even men can learn from some of what she did back in the day. And that is to see an opportunity. And this was at least one of the pluses I enjoyed in watching the Netflix film, is that she was always looking for a business opportunity. She was always trying to save a buck here, save a buck there. It reminds me of me here at Harlem World magazine. But was that part of the story true? Was she that kind of business person where she was always living the business, always looking for an opportunity, always looking to grow the business?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, this is the Hollywood version, and people should not take it as a history lesson. But I thought Octavia Spencer really did embody the courage and tenacity and the sacrifices and joys of building a business. I loved the scene in the marketplace where you can see her trying to persuade other women. So I think that part is, you know, really does capture what happened. And when she would talk with people about developing a business, she'd say the first thing you have to do is have a high-quality product. And her product did work. It did heal scalp ailments, scalp infections, made healthy scalps, allowed the hair to grow. But once you have that product, she would have said, you have to advertise. And she was a model of what it took. She advertised in most of the major black newspapers. In fact, some of the publishers said she helped keep them in business because she paid her bills on time.
Right.
She traveled all over the United States to do lectures and to sell her products. And that would be, you know, if she didn't have Instagram and computers and radio advertising, but she did the next best thing, which was high touch. And then she had a great skill at being able to surround herself with people who were leaders. So she would travel to a city, do a lecture, demonstrate her products, and there would be whatever woman seemed to have the most spark was the person she made her lead agent. And then she hired her, what we now call C-suite, her executive team with an attorney, F.B. Ransom. The manager of her factory was a woman named Alice Kelly, who'd been dean of girls at a black school, and then on and on. But it was this ability to identify leadership and then to empower them.
It's pretty amazing, and I, as many times as I've read the story, I looked at the, of course, Self-Made a number of times. You know, I wanted to ask you, and I just to let our listeners know, typically ahead of a podcast, I send a guest the questions of what we will talk about. And then, of course, there's always the question that I didn't prepare you for, and I have one of those. You know,
I'm cool with that.
Okay, good. You live in some ways, it feels like, the story, and of course you've written the story. Are there any things that really still amaze you and surprise you about Miss Walker?
Look, just when you think about the journey from a washerwoman making $1.50 a week to, you know, with no real formal education.
Right.
To living in a mansion in Irvington, New York, overlooking the Hudson, and providing jobs and economic independence for tens of thousands of women, and then using her platform as a political activist to support the anti-lynching movement, to be a patron of the arts. All of those things are, they still amaze me. And then she was so political that she was spied upon by a black spy, she and Ida B. Wells, and they were considered Negro subversives by the Wilson administration, which, of course, just, like, she didn't just make money and, you know, she loved cars, there's no question, she liked fur coats. I'm not mad at her about that. But she also was very intentional about using that money to help others.
And that's really amazing, and we are having a little technical problem that we have just fixed. My apologies. And I want to
listen, we are in life in the pandemic, and I think we're all rolling with the punches.
and I'm thank you for being flexible. I just wanted to let our listeners know they listen to Danny Tisdale, and they're listening to the Danny Tisdale Show on Harlem World Radio. Harlem World Magazine is an independently owned company. So please do what you might have done at the turn of the last century and support our work by hitting the orange patron button at the bottom and become a patron. And what's fantastic is that I'm speaking to Miss Alila Bundles about the life of Madam C.J. Walker, who is an incredible business success story, who happened to be a woman. And, you know, we're Harlem World Magazine, Miss Bundles, and tell us a little bit about what brought the Walkers to Harlem.
So Alila Walker was running the Pittsburgh office. Madam Walker was in St. Louis, moved to Denver in 1905. C.J. Walker, her good friend, moved there. They got married and in Denver, and then Lelia moved there to run the Denver office. She and C.J. traveled around the U.S., settled in Pittsburgh in 1908 and then moved to Indianapolis in 1910. But while Lelia, her daughter, was running the Pittsburgh office, New York was part of her territory. And when she visited Harlem, she was always impressed when she visited New York, because actually 53rd Street was still kind of the center of things in 1910. But both women visited Madam Walker. There are things, articles in the New York Age where she's there selling her products. And it was really her daughter, Alelia, who persuaded her that they needed to have a presence in Harlem. So in 1913, they bought a building on 136th Street, 108 mm-hmm. West 136th. And then a year or so later, they bought the building next door and had Vertner Tandy redesign it into a double front building with a beautiful building with limestone and brick. And that became the Walker headquarters in Harlem. So it was a it was perfect timing. 1913, as you know, as Harlem was becoming the mecca for Black culture and politics.
That's right. The Harlem Renaissance as we know it. And like it seems many things in her life, perfect timing. And I was curious about that as another, you know, kind of business skill. Any surprise question again, of course. Where did that timing come from for her to see an opportunity? Rather, it was, I guess, and indirectly, it was a business opportunity coming to Harlem and then turning it into the hot spot, the go-to location during the time. Accident on purpose? Was she a visionary to see that this would play out the way that it did? What do you think?
Well, I think a combination of all those things. She was a visionary, but I think she was very tuned into what was going on with African Americans at the time, mm-hmm. and especially with women, because she had been one of those women. She'd been one of the women really struggling, and as African Americans were leaving the rural South, moving to the cities, and while we think of the Great Migration as primarily between World War I and World War II, there really was, as you know, migrations that had been going on ever since the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
this migration prior to World War I was African Americans really being set up with sharecropping. And then as the Europeans, as European migration, immigration was cut off, black bodies were needed in the factories. And so black people were moving to cities. And she saw that many women needed ways to work that were not domestic work. You know, and domestic work was really quite dangerous. Yes, you might just be dusting, but there was also the threat of sexual violence, of having to be away from your family. And she knew that women needed something else.
Hmm. And she knew that women needed something else, and she was on the spot to provide what it is that those women may need. And it was everyday women and not just professional women. And that is the insight that entrepreneurs, when they have it, see it, and really take advantage of that opportunity.
You know, certainly right now when we're, you know, things are really tough for a lot of people. People are losing their jobs. There are things that they thought were going to be prosperous and financially lucrative have dried up right now. But believe me, there is somebody out there who is figuring out a way to turn this into an opportunity.
That's right. That's right. Well, and you kind of beat me to the punch here because I was going to ask you, you know, if there's what would you say to some little girl out there, predominantly our listeners, our readers, our customers are 60-65% women and 30-45% of them are moms. What would you say to a little girl out there who's listening and saying, you know, I want to be the next Madam C.J. Walker, and maybe she's sitting on mom's lap or they're sitting next to each other and mom's listening also. What would you say to her, Ms. Bundles, as she, you know, listens to this conversation and this vast, incredible American history about this black woman?
Well, you know, I think I'd first say Happy Mother's Day to all those moms who are out there. But I think it is so important what we pour into our daughters, the love and the confidence, the self-confidence, those kinds of things that we develop in our daughters, because that makes a difference about how they show up in the world. Do they feel good about themselves? Do they like mm-hmm. what they look like? Do they mm-hmm. have goals and aspirations? And do moms and dads encourage those goals and aspirations? You know, if you rain on a child's parade, then that can scar them for life. And, you know, mm-hmm. I just feel so fortunate that both my parents really encouraged me to be a writer, to do the thing that I wanted to do. And instead of saying, well, you have to go work in the hair care business because that's what we're doing. And in many ways, I found my way back to telling this story. And I really do think telling our stories is our power, that we need to know our history. Every family has heroes and heroines. And so on this Mother's Day, I would encourage people to learn about those women and their family who made a way out of no way.
Made a way out of no way is really a great statement and really profound in a lot of ways. And can you give us some insight? I understand that you are working on another book.
Yep, absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that one?
Sure, sure. So I've now written 4 books about Madam Walker. And I will say to you that it started really at Columbia at the journalism school. Phyllis Garland was my professor. Phil Garland was the only black woman on the faculty at the J School at the time in the mid-1970s. And she recognized my name, Alelia. That's right, the journalism school. And she recognized the spelling of my name and knew that there was a connection to Madam Walker. So she validated that story for me and insisted that I write my master's paper. So that was many, many years ago. But that turned into 4 books. And On Her Own Ground, which came out in 2001, was the first really major biography of Madam Walker, though I had already written a young adult book in 1991. But now I am finishing what I started when I wrote On Her Own Ground, and that is doing the first major biography of Alelia Walker, who was Madam Walker's daughter and who lived in Harlem from 1913 to 1931. So I'm just as I found that what most people knew about Madam Walker before I wrote On Her Own Ground was either incorrect or mythical or, you know, or limited, I have found the same thing with Alelia Walker's story. And I will say the character in Self-Made is very much unlike who she was. So it's really important to me to tell the story of this woman who was a patron of the arts and who traveled internationally to London and Rome and Paris and Addis Ababa and Cairo, and who whose parties at the house on 136th Street, at her apartment at 80 Edgecombe, and at the mansion in Irvington at Villa Loaro hosted everybody who was anybody during the Harlem Renaissance, from the artists and writers musicians and actors and European royalty and African diplomats. So I'm trying to tell her story with the same level of research and authenticity as I did with Madam Walker's story.
You know, I can't wait. I mean, she was a diva before they used the word diva.
She was a diva.
All of that. And you know, I want to get personal for a second, because I was thinking about our first podcast we did together and then today's podcast. And maybe I'm completely wrong, but I notice a certain amount of joy and I don't know if completeness is the right word, but joy in your voice that I didn't recognize the first time. It sounds like you're at a good place. Is that true?
Well, that's good. I like to have joy.
No, it's great. I love it too. That's why I'm pointing at it.
I think you're right. And if depending on when we talked, so when I finished, we talked at some point during the 2000s. So I had finished the book. I was still at that point probably still working at ABC, maybe, you know, I spent 2 days a week in New York, so I was kind of on a stressful commute every week.
That sounds about right.
And, you know, and just, you know, so I was still working for somebody else, and I have had an amazing decade of being able to be on nonprofit boards, and I've had some personal family loss, so I've been around the barn on all kinds of things. But I now am so glad that people know Madam Walker's name, even though, you know, the Self-Made series makes her name well known, and there were some great things about it, but it also has created some new myths.
Some challenges,
but still, it gives me an opportunity to talk about her. And now the Alelia Walker biography will be my last book that takes this level of research. And so I'm almost finished with it, and I am really looking forward to – sending that book out into the world so that I can have a conversation with people about
that.
Not just Alelia Walker, but about Harlem during that period of time.
Right. Oh, fantastic. And as I knew would happen, we're at the 3-minute mark, and I just, these last few minutes, wanted to focus on you a bit. And I asked you about a girl out there, or even a boy, who could be inspired by Miss Walker's story. And I was curious about you and your story. And what if there's someone out there listening who wants to be a writer and maybe having trouble being motivated, but you are always motivated and you seem to always be excited. What advice do you give to the future writer who wants to follow in your pumps?
You know, just read everything you can. And now you have access on the internet to people's conversations and YouTube conversations and audio books. So you can learn and you can, you know, when we get past the pandemic, go to book signings, go to listen to people lecture and ask questions. Raise your hand. I always love it when somebody young is in the audience and they ask me
a question.
And I think most writers do too.
You know, fantastic. And one of the rare interviews where it's a short, succinct answer, and it gives me opportunity to ask another question. Love
Great.
It. And I love talking to you. And, of course, I have another 50 questions. And maybe I can do that when you have your next book come out. But, you know, thank you so much for being on the show. But this is not my last question. The last question is, and we've got a minute left, is please let our listeners know how they can stay in contact with you, buy your books, and just hear how fabulous you are and stay on top of it.
Sure, and I will love to come back, but people can find me on my websites, AleliaBundles.com, AleliaBundles.com, and MadamCJWalker.com, MadamCJWalker. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at AleliaBundles. So I hope that people will check out my website, sign up for the newsletter, and follow me on social media.
Okay, listeners, you know the directions. Get to it. Thank you, Ms. Bundles, for being on the show. Loved every second of it, and much luck and success for you to continue. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for listening in on your busy Mother's Day, and happy Mother's Day to all of you mothers out there listening, and your fathers, too, who are making moms great. Thank you. Bye-bye.